Hi, I'm Amber. I'm a Reiki master and a shamanic practitioner. My website is sacredspacehealing.org. That's sacredspacehealing.org. I have been running my own healing practice for the last 8 years. I'm working as a healer for the last 10 years. And I'm trained in shamanic healing, angelic Reiki, Uzui Reiki, white time healing, and multidimensional healing, as well as past life and karmic healing. And coaching. So today's podcast is focused on being rewarded for the things that we love. There's a phrase that I think artists tend to use, maybe more than the most vocations in life, just through my observation, but I could be wrong in this, but this is what I've observed. And that is to say, the phrase is, I'm so lucky to get paid to do the thing that I love. Actors say it a lot, and I know that because I trained as an actor, and then I worked in the industry for a good sort of 8 to 10 years before taking a break and setting up my own healing practice. And now I combine these two vocations in my life alongside my writing. And I remember when I first left drama school and I started working as an actor in the industry and getting these, you know, these gigs that I was so chuffed to get, just so happy that I was on these programs that I'd grown up watching, and, you know, the script turned up on my doorstep and it had a stamp of a well-known production company on it. And I just thought, oh, I'm so lucky I get paid to do the thing that I love. And I would repeat that to myself quite a lot. And I would say that to family members and to friends. And, you know, when I had crazy schedules or tons of lines to learn or difficult people to work with, I would keep reminding myself how lucky I was that I got paid to do the thing that I loved. When I was working in theatre and I would, you know, some theatre jobs were harder than others, I would constantly remind myself how lucky I was to be walking through that stage door entrance and getting paid to do the thing that I loved and that I'd always dreamt of doing. And then somewhere along the line, I stopped feeling lucky and I started just feeling really resentful because I felt like I wasn't getting paid to do the thing that I loved. I was getting paid, but I wasn't getting paid to do the thing that I loved because my love was growing into something deeper. And for me, it grew into spirituality and teaching and healing. And I wasn't, you know, that was something that I wasn't being rewarded for. There was no exchange happening for that. And so it was leaving me feeling dissatisfied. And so I explored that love affair. I explored what it was like to love healing and spirituality and teaching and Reiki and shamanism and all of that. And then that led to setting up my own business. And what the place I seem to have come to now, you know, with that phrase, I'm so lucky to get paid to do the thing that I love, I don't actually say that phrase anymore. It's not that I don't have gratitude, because I have incredible gratitude any day that I, you know, get given any kind of recompense for the things that I put out into the world. I'm just so grateful that I'm acknowledged and recognized in any small or great way. But I think what that phrase, I'm so lucky to get paid to do the thing that I love, I think what that phrase does is it implies that we are somehow the lucky ones. So somehow, what we are experiencing by getting paid to do the thing that we love is—it's unique. It's special. It's not common. It's not usual. It's outside of the norm. It's a small percentage. It's a gift. And so there's a few layers to that. I think the first layer is it kind of implies that we're special in some way, or we're elevated, or we're different. And I don't think that's necessarily a healthy way to look at ourselves as individuals. But I think what it also implies, whether that's implicitly or tacitly, is that the rest of humanity, the rest of the world's population, don't get paid to do the thing that they love. And that's just the way things are. And for some reason, my thinking and my gut kind of riles against that. And I want to scream out, but why aren't people getting paid to do the thing that they love? I mean, surely this is our basic multidimensional spiritual right, that we get rewarded for doing the thing that we love, because if we're doing the thing that we love, we're putting more love out into the world. So why would we not get, why would that not bounce back at us? I believe it does. So therefore, it's not an exception to some rule that we're lucky to get paid to do the thing that we love. It just means that we're in alignment with our life path. We're in alignment with what we're here to do, and that's why we're getting rewarded for doing the thing that we love. It's not because we're lucky. It's just because we're in alignment. And if we could get, if one individual can get into alignment and get rewarded for doing the thing that they love, then another individual can do that as well. So here's my thinking around this. I think, getting paid, rewarded, however you want to term that, because I think we forget that money is energy. So it's the energy of gratitude and reward and celebration that is coming towards us, recognition. Getting rewarded for doing the thing that we love is why we're here. You know, it's part of our life purpose. We're not here to suffer. We're not here to do things that we hate. We're here to bring our majesty, our glory, our joy, our love, and our loves into the world. And if we're not doing that, then it's just because we're out of alignment. We've forgotten how majestic we really are. And the journey then is to get back on track, to get back into alignment with our highest and multidimensional selves. And so how do we do that? How do we not fall into another 3D fallacy and not fall into another vortex of Maya and illusion that it's luck that means that we get paid to do what we love? How do we navigate ourselves, our bodies, our multidimensional bodies, so that we are in alignment with what we love and we're getting rewarded for it? I don't have the cure-all for every individual on this planet, because we all see reality through our own channel and our own filters. So I only see what I'm able to see. You know, I only see what I'm able to comprehend because of the level of my consciousness and my awakeness, for lack of a better term. And others will see things that I don't see. But how I perceive it is, we have to be committed to doing the thing that we love in order to get rewarded for it. So there's no point looking at people who get rewarded or paid for doing what they love and envying them and thinking they have opportunities that we don't have. And there's no point thinking, oh, well, I'm getting paid to do what I love because I'm lucky. You know, I'm just one of the lucky ones. I think we need to look at it in a more empowered way and a more masterful way. If we do the thing that we love and put our energies towards the thing that we love and do it with passion and gratitude and joy and humility and bravery and freedom, the universe, life, can't help but line up and reward us for that, as long as what we're putting out into the world is making a positive contribution and raising the vibration. And so I think the question that we ask ourselves as individuals in our quiet times is, what is it that I really love doing and that I would do anyway, even if I wasn't going to get paid for it? You know, because it's rare that people will say, oh, I love, for example, acting. You know, I love reading other people's lines and putting on makeup and wearing unusual clothes and standing in front of a camera. I mean, that's not what, I mean, maybe some people go into it for that reason, but I mean, that's not what it's about. Often for actors, and I know for me, it was a love of creating. So I went into acting because I loved to create, and I really believed and still do that we feel less alone when we see, hear, take part in stories of the collective or stories of the minority or the minorities. We feel less alone. We feel like we have a place in the world. And I found that love for creating in my healing work, as well as in my writing work, and as well as in my acting work and in my producing work. And so it was just different ways of creating. So I wouldn't say that I followed a love for acting. I followed a love for creating, and acting was one of the things that allowed me to create. But there are other ways that I can continue to create, so I'm not limited to one outlet for my love affair, for my love, for my passion, for my creativity. So I think the question we ask ourselves is, what is it that I love to do? You know, is it that you love to bring people together, or that you love to make people feel better, or you love to make people laugh, or you love to experience new foods or new cultures, or you love to travel, or, you know, what is it that you love to do that if you weren't able to do, life would just feel wrong, you know, life would feel incomplete. If I couldn't create, and I have those moments, as every artist does, when I feel stuck and I feel like I can't write or I can't paint or it's just not, you know, there's something not flowing in my system. When I can't create, I feel awful. You know, I feel like I'm not myself. I'm not putting anything positive out into the world. But if I can create a podcast or a video clip or write a poem or run a workshop or be lucky enough, that word lucky, be aligned enough to get an acting job, then amazing. I'm getting a chance to create. I'm putting out into the world something that is my passion, that is my love. So the first question that we ask ourselves on this journey to getting rewarded for doing the thing we love is, what is it that I love to do? And you might find that it's an umbrella term, you know, I love to bring people together. And then you think, well, how am I ever going to do that in a way that A, makes a difference in the world, B, sustains me, and C, is something that I can continue to do for the rest of my life? But I think that's where we get inventive. You know, bringing people together can be about running a restaurant or running workshops or creating a social media platform, or, you know, there's so many different ways in which we can do that. But if our passion is that we love to bring people together, we'll always be finding ways to do that. We'll always be finding ways to bring people together. And because we're always following our passion, it follows that we will always be rewarded for our passion, because we're operating at a high vibration of joy and love and positivity. It's rare, I really believe this, it's rare that if you're following your passion, you don't get rewarded for it. And I might get slammed down by just hordes of artists who tell me that they're following their passion and they're not being rewarded for it. And the only thing that I would say to that, and I have worked with a lot of artists and dancers and actors and directors and producers and, you know, creatives. As a healer, I've had a lot of clients who are creatives. And often what it is that the block to receiving reward is, I mean, there's so many, but it's often not believing that you deserve the reward. And linked to that is trying to do work that pleases. You know, if I do it this way, people will like me. If I do it this way, I'll get that job. If I do it this way, I might get that exhibition. I might get that, you know, that casting. And as we know, as we learn often the hard way, it isn't about doing it in such a way that you please the other. It's about doing it in such a way that you feel most alive and most truthful and therefore most aligned. And when you are in that space, you will get rewarded. Actors know this, and, you know, I'm sure you could Google and YouTube a load of videos from really successful A-listers out there giving advice to newbies who will always say, don't go into the room and give the casting director what you think they want. Go into the room and do, you know, go into the room and create. Go into the room and do what makes you come alive. You know, give it your own individual stamp. They're either going to love it or they're going to hate it. If they hate it, fair enough. It's not, you're not in alignment with that project. It wasn't for you. But if they love it, how amazing, how incredible, because you've given them something unique and you are in alignment with that project. And so I think we have to trust that when we are 100%, if it's possible to stay there, but, you know, when we're anywhere between 70 to, you know, 90% in our truth, we will get recognized by those that are also in alignment with our particular medicine with our particular gift for the world. Our medicine to the world isn't always about healing, as in being the healer. Our medicine for the world, and it's often a term used in shamanism and in circles, you know, what is your gift for the world? What's your song for the world? What's your medicine? And our medicine is the thing that we have administered to ourselves over the years to heal ourselves. And then we get so masterful in it that it now becomes our special brand of medicine that we're able to give to others. And I do believe that our medicine for the world is the same thing as our song for the world, is the same thing as the thing that you love the most. They're all linked. If I think back to my own experiences, I started writing when I was 5, writing poetry and short stories. And I believe that I did that because it was my outlet. You know, I had a very difficult childhood and I didn't have any siblings. We moved around a fair bit. And so all of those things made me, I was very shy. All these things made me feel quite isolated. I didn't have an outlet, and it wasn't the easiest for me to express how I felt to another face to face. But when I put pen to paper, all this stuff just kind of came out of me, and I found that I had a voice, and this voice was a voice that needed to be at that point in my life on paper. And so writing became my medicine for myself. I had a diary from like the age of 5 or something that I wrote in every day. You know, I mean, it's one of the practices I now instill in my clients is to journal every day because it's so healthy to do that. But I was doing that as a 5-year-old. So I was writing in my diary every day and I was writing my short story every day. I used to carry this little journal around with me and I wrote in pencil and it was green. The journal, and I would write a chapter, if I could, a day. I mean, and every writer knows that you're meant to spend at least, you know, 30 minutes to an hour every day writing, and that's how you build your muscle. And I was doing that at the age of 5 because it was my medicine. It made me feel good. It made me feel really good to sit down with my notebook and write. And I could lose myself in this world, a fantasy of which, and it wasn't just all fantasy, because a lot of the stories that I wrote were about the things that were going on inside me, but I didn't know how to express them. Or maybe I felt guilty about expressing them. So I could express all these emotions that were going on inside me through my stories, through my short stories, through my poetry. And it remained my medicine and has remained my medicine for my whole life. You know, the moment I'm not able to write is the moment I really start to kind of decay and disintegrate at a core level, because I'm not able to then have any outlet that feels satisfying for me. And then I feel like I don't exist. So writing was my medicine. Creating was my medicine. And in time, it became the thing that I then did. I trained as an actress and I wrote and had my work published. And so in some small way, I was starting to kind of, if you like, administer the medicine to others through my creativity, so that if someone was touched by a poem that I wrote or someone was moved by a performance that I did, then my medicine is reaching others. And it wasn't until I stepped into formally being a healer and trained as a trained in Reiki and shamanism that I started to realize how potent our medicine is. And so those of you that have worked with me, or even if you go on the website, you know, you'll see that my healing sessions are very individual and they're very unique, and they combine traditional healing like energy work, you know, Reiki and shamanism, with creative tools. Pretty much every client that comes to see me, the very first thing I say to them when we agree to work together is get yourself a really nice journal that you enjoy writing in, because you will be journaling throughout this process. And they're set a lot of rituals that are often very creative, because that's my medicine and that's how spirit will move through me. That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to create. One of the things I'm here to do, I feel, is to create. And for that creativity to touch people's lives in such a way that it transforms their life in some way, however that may be. And there are different ways to do that through healing, through workshops, through writing, through acting, and so on. So it's about really diving deep into your story and asking yourself, what is the thing that makes you feel really good? Now, I don't mean the things that are addictions, right? I don't mean the things that are distractions, because you could say, well, drinking makes me feel really good, so I'm going to open a brewery. I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm not sure. Or you could say, you know, drugs make me feel really good. I'm going to become a dealer. I'm spreading my magic in the world. I don't mean it in that way. And I'm sure most of you are not going to take it that way. It's about, you know, what is it that is your medicine that genuinely makes you feel good and also elevates you to a higher level of consciousness? What do you lose yourself in so that you find that you're moving to a different rhythm and you feel aligned? You feel sacred, you feel divine, you feel special, you feel unique, you feel godlike, if you like. You know, what is it that you enjoy doing the most? It could be cooking a really great meal. It could be painting. It could be singing. It could be dancing. It could be decorating. It could be building something with your hands. It could be teaching. And you will find that there will be offshoots to this passion. So as much as I loved creating, I also loved the idea of teaching. At one point, I wanted to be a teacher because I just thought it was the most beautiful thing in the world to inspire another to create. You know, like, I really admired my English teachers and my philosophy teachers at school because they challenged me and they got me thinking and they got me creating. They got me excited about the world. And I just thought, what a beautiful thing to do. I would love to do that. And my drama teachers that kind of got me out of my shell and had me singing and, you know, doing little Shakespeare monologues, and how much that changed my life. But it still had a common thread. It was still about creativity. It was still about touching people and creating change in their lives, but that it was different facets of the same medicine, you know, different dilutions of the same medicine, different potencies. So I think if we then get very clear on what it is that we want to do, or what it is that brings us joy, that we love, that we feel is our medicine, we can't help but then do that thing, right? Because why would we not do the thing that makes us feel most divine, most sacred, most holy, most godlike? Why would we not do that? Why would we choose not to do that? I think what often happens, and I hear this, have heard this a lot in healing sessions, is that we have something that we really love that is probably our medicine, you know, that is the thing that we always go back to. But at some point in our life, someone said to us, well, that's not a career, you can't do that. That's ridiculous. Or you're not very good. And so we gave up the dream. You know, we gave up. This is about going back to what that original thing was for you and saying, well, what if, you know, what if I could go back to that point in my life and make different choices? What choices would I have made based on this love for this thing that I always wanted to do? And so it's often something I'll ask clients, you know, if you could have done anything, if there's anything that you could have done in your life, what would it be? And you would be amazed at the number of people who will say, I don't know, I'd have been a singer, I'd have been a dancer, I'd have been a painter, I'd have been a photographer, I'd have been and you wouldn't think it, you know, you wouldn't think that this city worker, this banker, this, you know, this high-powered executive sitting in front of you tells you that their dream was to, you know, be a photographer or to be a dancer or a musician. You know, you wouldn't think it because they're not betraying that in their personality in any way. They've suppressed it so deeply. And then suddenly I see their face light up and the spark comes into their eyes. And there they are. I can see their divine selves. I can see how aligned they seem, they look, they feel as soon as they talk about this medicine. And the thing that's making them sick is that they're not administering to themselves the medicine that heals them. And then the thing that will keep them disempowered and keep them in vortexes of illusion and, you know, chasing their own tails is that they're not then putting that medicine out into the world. But the moment that they do, their lives will change and they will find that they will get rewarded. And often the fear is, and again, I've seen this with clients, it's the fear that, well, I've got this great job and a house and a car and holidays and status. I can't give all of that up so I can, you know, paint landscapes. No one's going to pay me for that. But you see, that's thinking with a logical mind. If painting landscapes is your medicine, if that is your passion, if that is your great love affair, and you put that out into the world with all your love and all your passion, I do not believe with 1 ounce of my being that you will not get rewarded for that in one way or another. Now, the thing is, we see reward as one thing, big fat paychecks. That's how we see reward. Am I going to make thousands of pounds from this thing? Am I going to be able to have a mortgage and send the kids to private school and go on holiday through doing this one thing? But you see, your reward may not be that. Your reward might be elevation in the community. Your reward might be other forms of exchange, but you're still getting rewarded. And I think we have to have a broader perspective of what reward means. And then it will give us a broader perspective of what we're here to do. And inevitably, then, when we come into alignment, the universe is not going to have us suffering for doing the thing that we love. We will have our needs met. And we have to believe that our needs will be met because we are administering our medicine to ourselves and to others. So how could our needs possibly not be met when we're doing something so magical? That's how I look at it. So when I hear people say, I'm lucky to get paid to do the thing that I love, I understand the desire for gratitude, which is very important. But I don't think it's about luck. I think it's about alignment. And it's about following your heart. You know, it's about having the courage to follow your passion. It's about knowing that this particular thing that you're doing in your life is a core part of who you are. It defines who you are. It is why you're here. I feel that if we're constantly moving towards our goal every single day, we can't help but be rewarded for it. And so then the next phase, the next question to ask oneself is, well, if this is the thing that I really love and I believe that it's my medicine for the world, when I administer it to myself and to others, then the next question to ask is, well, how much of my time in a day do I actually spend doing the thing that I love? Because if you're spending 5 minutes in a week doing the thing that you love, how can you possibly hope to get rewarded for that? Think of the exchange, right? You're putting 5 minutes of medicine, 5 minutes of joy, 5 minutes of love into the world, into your life, and you're expecting a big fat paycheck in return. That ain't going to happen. If you spend 2 hours every day doing the thing that you love in lots of different ways, you'll get rewarded for it. If you put aside a day a week to do the thing that you love, and you put your medicine out into the world, you'll get rewarded for it. If you don't do the thing that you love, unless, you know, you remember, or, you know, unless someone comes to you with an opportunity, you can't possibly hope to be rewarded for it. And people often say, well, I can't do this thing that I love. I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't paint, I can't cook, or whatever, because of this, that, and the other. But you see, this, that, and the other will always be there. And that's why we have the bigger umbrella of what is it that we love. It's not, you know, actors who say, well, I'm imprisoned by the fact that I'm waiting for the phone to ring. But you see, if you went into acting because you love speaking other people's words and being told where to stand, then yeah, that's quite a disempowering passion to have. But if you went into acting because you love telling stories, or you love bringing people together, or you love creating, then you can do that at any time, in any place, in any way, and you'll still be putting your medicine out into the world. If you became a chef because, you know, this is a ridiculous example, but if you became a chef because you love mushrooms or potatoes, and you don't feel that you can cook unless you have the right King Edward's potatoes or the right form of mushroom, and so you feel really stifled because, oh, I couldn't cook that meal that I really wanted to cook today because I didn't have the right shiitake mushroom. Well, that's a ridiculous cage that you've put yourself in. But if you say, you know, I love cooking because actually what I really love doing is experimenting with flavor and taste and color and texture, and the movement, the fluidity of cooking, the alchemy of cooking. I love being an alchemist. Then you can be an alchemist in lots of different ways. You can be an alchemist while you're, you know, making up a smoothie, or you're buttering your toast, or you're making your packed lunch for the kids, or you're working as a dinner lady, or, you know, whatever. But we have to know what our love is, and it has to be a umbrella rather than just one little kernel of thing that we just focus on. Because when we do that, we're straitjacketing ourselves. So my invitation to any out there that this resonates with, and who feel that, I'm in this job, I don't really enjoy it, I'm not getting paid to do the thing that I love, you know, I want to get paid to do the thing that I love, is to follow this kind of slightly sketchy plan that I've laid out. But just to ask yourself these questions: what is it that you love? You know, what was always your medicine that you administered to yourself to bring you into alignment, to help you feel good? And are you able to administer that medicine to others, and do you want to? And how much are you actively moving towards the thing that you love every single day? Or are you just doing it every, 6 months? And can you start to make changes in your life so you're doing the thing that you love every single day? You're the living embodiment of what you love, of your medicine, every single day. And do you have faith that when you are the living embodiment of what you love every single day, that you will get rewarded for it? Because you will. And the moment we fall out of love with what we say is our medicine, and the moment it just becomes something that we're doing and we're treading water, that's when you'll find that the rewards will stop. Because you're treading water, you're not in alignment with your passion. So always follow the thing that makes you feel amazing, you know? Always follow the thing that makes you feel authentically, truthfully amazing, not what you think you should be doing. You know, a lot of people think that they if I'm going to be a musician, I have to be in the charts, or if I'm going to be a dancer, then I have to be doing mainstream dance, or I have to be working with this dance company. You know, if I'm an actor, I have to be in LA, or I have to be, you know, on Broadway or whatever. But that may not be your truth. Like, that may not be what's authentic for you. And you have to, what we have to do is follow our truth rather than trying to make ourselves something that we're not. I'm sure it's in every industry, and I have had clients who work in other industries where I watch them trying to mold themselves into what they think they should be as artists. But I observe it obviously in the field in which I work. And I mean, it's death as a writer. If you try and write like another writer, that's death. Why would you do that? Find your own voice. And sometimes I think these are 3D fallacies, but I see these things kind of posted on social media about, if you're going to be a better writer, you have to read as many different writers as you can. You know, you have to read as many different poets as you can, because you'll absorb and you'll learn and you'll gather ways of writing from them. And I kind of, at a core level, really disagree with that. I think if you want to keep your uniqueness, you sort of, yeah, obviously you want to take in what's happening in the, you know, what's the zeitgeist right now. But if you take it in too much, you'll constantly be changing your style because you want to keep up to date with the competition. And the whole point is that your style is unique. The whole point is that when you write with a voice that no one else has, not a voice that is a mishmash of 5 other voices because you've read their books or gone to their gigs or read their poetry books. And I see it a lot with actors, is that, you know, there's this desire to blend in, to fit in, you know, and LA has a certain, there's a feeling that LA, for example, America, has a certain niche, that you have to look a certain way, your body has to be a certain build, your face has to be a certain way, and so off go these actors and get their teeth whitened and crowned and their Botox put in, and they go down the gym and bulk up, or they go on diets, or, you know, whatever, because they feel, if I look like that and sound like that, I'm going to be successful. But I still believe that it's just about embracing what your unique medicine is. You know, if it was just about everyone looking the same way, we'd never have had the vast diversity of performers that we've had over the years in cinema and theatre and TV, and we still want that. We still crave faces that look different. We're not always shown that because we're moving into quite a homogenized, robotic way of interacting. But I think if we're ever going to maintain our authenticity, we just have to look at what we have and trust that we chose this body, we chose this face, this voice, these eyes. That I believe eyes are our windows to the soul and have been with us lifetime after lifetime. But we chose this body, we chose this vehicle because it was going to serve us the best for the work that we were here to do. Why would we pick a rusty, run-down old car to navigate our incredible spirit and to travel around in on planet Earth? We're not going to do that. We're going to pick the vehicle that's most suited to the terrain that we are here to navigate. You know, we're not going to get a Range Rover if the terrain that we're going to navigate is little cobbled streets somewhere. We're not going to, pick a horse-drawn carriage if we're out in the desert somewhere. So we knew, our soul knows, our soul knew, I'm coming to planet Earth because there's some stuff I've got to do. What's the best terrain? What's the best vehicle that I can get for the terrain that I'm going to be in? And we chose it. So you have everything that you need to bring your medicine into the world. You don't need to go out there and be more like the next person. You just need to be more like you and trust that you are enough. And I sometimes feel that that's the hardest thing on this journey, is trusting that you are enough, because when you believe that you are enough, you will get rewarded. When you believe that your medicine is enough, it will get rewarded. Your art is enough. Your writing is enough. Your creativity is enough. Your food is enough. Your buildings are enough. You know, whatever it is that you do is enough. It will get rewarded. When we feel it's not enough and we have to do more, we probably will get rewarded, because we'll have fallen into the illusory mire of the zeitgeist. But it will be illusory, as in it won't be sustained throughout our lifetime. We will have peaks and troughs. And we will constantly be chasing our tails, trying to people please. What do you need me to be? Because I'll be what you need me to be. And it's not about that. Because who are you pleasing? Society is constantly changing and evolving. And we are society. So if we're trying to please society, who are we trying to please? We are the ones who create society. If everyone stood in their individuality and was authentic, what an amazing world we would have. There would be no competition. There would be no jealousy or envy or pettiness, because we wouldn't look at the next person and say, oh, I wish I had that. I want that. We would say, oh, that's amazing that you have that and I have this. And I celebrate you and I celebrate myself. So if we all learn to celebrate our authenticity, we can really celebrate our unique medicine, put it out into the world, bring more joy into the world, raise the collective consciousness, raise the vibration of this planet, and in so doing, it bounces back at us and we get rewarded for it. It is pretty simple. It's just getting our heads and our hearts around the steps to it. I hope some of this has resonated and assists. I tend to channel quite a lot of information when I'm doing podcasts, so I don't plan it out. It's not typed out or anything. So the information can sometimes come through quite quickly. And my suggestion is usually that, take down what resonates with you, recycle what doesn't, and then go back maybe and have another listen to the podcast from the start, because you will find other things that will activate other knowings in you and other understandings in you, and hopefully give you some tools to just start to answer these questions for yourself and start to walk on that path so you can be rewarded for doing the thing that you love. The website again is sacredspacehealing.org, and if you go on the website, then there are meditations there, blog posts, podcasts, and of course the healing sessions that I provide that may well assist you as well if you are on this journey right now to uncovering what your medicine is. Wherever you are on your journey, wherever you are right now in your life, have faith that you are in the right place. And that the moment you turn your attention to what it is that you love, love turns its attention to you. The moment you turn your attention to your divinity, the divine turns its attention towards you. And everything becomes your playground. Everything becomes your greatest ally. And so until the next time, so it is and so it shall be.